In 2015, the opening of an independent bookstore is an event rare enough to attract attention from bystanders. Rather like spotting a vintage automobile with shiny chrome bumpers and flashy fins sailing through your town's streets. Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. When the Gulf Coast Bookstore flung open its doors in Fort Myers, Florida, the attention was even greater than usual. On its bookshelves were the works of independent authors, and not those from the established publishing houses of the Big Five and others. Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly's senior writer, has some thoughts on this latest front in the self-publishing revolution, and he joins me now. Andrew, welcome back to Beyond the Book.
Hey there, Chris.
Well, we will get to a little discussion about the new business venture of these particularly enterprising independent authors in just a minute, but you and I are both back stateside, as they say, after a fairly productive London Book Fair last week, and good Lord, now we can see Book Expo on the horizon. So we've got to get ready for that big show as well in New York at the end of May. Lots of the things, though, that we saw and spoke about in London will be on the table for discussion at Book Expo, too, including, no doubt about it, Amazon.
Yes, indeed. And Amazon really was quite a big deal in London with the news that they had finished their terms deal with HarperCollins. And as we had discussed in London, Amazon at the London Book Fair really was what was almost like a tale of two fairs. You know, Amazon was revered in the author HQ part of the fair for its work with self-published authors. And, you know, if not reviled, at least somewhat disdained, shall we say, for their pretty tough negotiating stance on the professional floor among the publishers. And this week, you know, Amazon releases a very mixed first quarter numbers for 2015. Now, you can read all about those numbers on the PW website. I won't go into them too much here. And we'll have a deeper dive on those numbers on the PW site next week. But, you know, suffice it to say, with BEA just a little over a month away, and with Random House, Penguin Random House, I should say, the big fish, still the only major still about to come to a terms deal with Amazon, I think you can expect that talk about Amazon is going to be pretty high at BEA, as you usual. These numbers will do nothing to quell that discussion. Even as a measure of peace has sort of returned to the publishing valley. And by the way, I should mention next week on the show, we can talk about our BEA preview issue in PW. That'll be in our May 4th issue.
Okay. Well, you know, you mentioned the publishing valley. Well, in that publishing valley, we've got some players, some creatures running around that really weren't that prominent in years past. And we'll see a lot of the self-publishers at BEA's You Publish You. I'll moderate the keynote panel for that. And as well, of course, there is BookCon, the consumer event associated with Book Expo. But this week, some interesting news on the self-publishing front. As I mentioned at the start, there's a store in Florida open in Fort Myers and dedicated to indie authors. Tell us more.
Yeah, so, you know, by any measure, self-publishing is on the rise. But the one thing I did not expect to see, as our correspondent Judith Rosen reported last week, was the launch of an indie dedicated bookstore. You know, frustrated by a lack of opportunity to display and sell their books, self-published children's author and illustrator Patty Broussard Jefferson and history author Timothy Jacobs have decided to create a bookstore of their own, Gulf Coast Bookstore in Fort Myers, as you mentioned, that is only going to sell books by indie authors. Now, I think it's a neat concept. It's different from a traditional bookstore in that self-published authors will rent shelf space for 3 months for $60 plus a $15 setup fee. And that's close to what they would spend to exhibit at a single day-long book fair. And they'll also handle the stocking and restocking of their shelves. And in return, they'll keep 100% of every sale rather than the usual 40, 50% that a bookstore might give you for a sale on consignment. But what's notable to me is that what this says about book marketing, right? Because all we've heard about self-publishing for the last few years is that it's being driven by digital, that ebooks are what's driving self-publishing growth. But here is a venture that notes, that acknowledges that one of the prime ways to reach readers is through physical display, through actually having a book on a shelf with a jacket facing out to readers. And I truly doubt that the actual physical sales in this store are going to generate major profits, but I am very curious to see how the authors use this to market their ebooks. And any case, I think it's a fascinating new front in the indie publishing realm.
I couldn't agree more. I think the physical is underrated when it comes to publishing, and this is an example of a fairly enterprising pair of authors who recognize the importance of having a real product to show people and showcase. And in fact, showcasing and physical display is a topic that will be much discussed next week in New York with a panel, The Case for Libraries, moderated by marketer and Forbes columnist David Vinjamuri.
Yeah, that's right. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago on the show, and you can still read Vinjamuri's article online. It's called The Case for Libraries. It's on the PW site. And we'd love to have you at Tuesday's discussion, too. You know, you can still pre-register on the PW site or show up at the event, which is set for Tuesday, April 28th, from 8:30 in the morning to 11 at the Penguin Random House Auditorium at 1745 Broadway, New York, New York. So if you're in New York, please come. It's going to be a great talk. But again, you know, the discussion is going to focus a lot, as we were just discussing with the indie authors, on the physical merchandising of books, that is, products on a shelf. Now, most of our discussions on libraries have tended to focus on ebooks and the relative discord in that realm. But Vinjamuri's point is that with shelf space dwindling for books as chain stores close and as indies struggle, there are 16,000 public library branches around the country that are eager to pick up the slack. It's a powerful argument, and next week on the PW site, you can read all about the discussion, or better yet, come on down and take part in the discussion in person at the Random House Auditorium.
Well, it does sound fascinating, and I'm going to try to get David Vinjamuri onto our weekly podcast on Monday to hear more about this case for the libraries, and we'll look forward to chatting with him. Finally, this week, a minor development in the Apple ebook case. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so another topic I think that's going to heat up, maybe around BEA, is the appeals court weighs Judge Denise Coates' 2000 verdict that found Apple and five publishers liable for conspiring to fix ebook prices. But this week, as you said, the Apple ebooks monitor released his third report, which discusses Apple's progress in developing an antitrust training and compliance program. Now, most of this is not of much interest to publishers. There was actually very little directly related to the publishers in the report. But what is notable is that the monitor, Michael Bromwich, noted that Apple's cooperation has declined. Now, that's not surprising because Apple is asking an appeals court to ditch the monitor entirely. But the sense that you get from reading the report is that Apple really is masterfully playing its hand. It's using the lawyers to delay the monitor's work and doing so without tipping over into contempt territory. And in just a few months, the monitor's work is set to conclude. And I say, you know, the monitor's work might conclude, I should say. And that's a pretty large caveat there, because if Apple's appeals are unsuccessful, I could easily see the monitor asking to have his work extended. Why not? It's a pretty good paying gig, from what I understand. And I could see Judge Coates actually granting that request. Now, I think at this point, with the new deals with the publishers done and the ebook business moving on, we'd probably all just like this Apple thing to be over. But with the two major appeals still looming out there, this week, you know, the reading the report suggests that, you know, if the appeals don't go Apple's way, this might not be over for some time.
Well, that wouldn't shock me, Andrew. I have to say, Apple's never conceded that they had a responsibility for price fixing. So, in a sense, there's no surprise, and you really can't blame them for taking this kind of stance.
Can't blame them at all. You might, in fact, say that this is what you would expect, right? This is exactly how I would have expected them to react. But it could actually play out very badly for them, because if they lose their appeals, they're just setting themselves up for possibly having the monitorship extended. So we'll see if that strategy actually works out for them in the long run.
Yeah, it's a tough game to be playing, but the Apple's lawyers, as you say, really are very skillful at it. Andrew Albany, senior writer for Publishers Weekly, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure, as always.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. You can follow us on Twitter, find Beyond the Book on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at our website, beyondthebook.com. Our engineer and co-producer is Jeremy Briskey of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.